that regardless of what the hell happens in these rather difficult times, Camp David is always yours. And ours for 3 years and 8 months, huh?
Couldn't be more beautiful than I was this week.
Yeah, what it was. Good. Yeah. All your tulips were out on the bank down there by your pool, you know. And kids had their Easter egg hunt there, and that was
nice. Right.
It was very nice.
Both of those, you've got to look at first the question of legal vulnerability, and
second, the question of moral, ethics, publicity, and PR vulnerability. He said that's where it appears to me your vulnerability comes. And that...
The second is the right.
And he says, and that in turn depends on what people say. Whether it's true or not, it does not depend on the facts.
You mean like what Hunt says? And what McCord says? And what the loose cannon Dean says?
That's right.
And what LaRue says?
That's right. And he said there's a clear danger here with all these people rallying that somebody's going to decide to lie some more. Just as obviously people have already lied. And to lie to try to do, it's conceivable to lie to try to tie you into something you had no knowledge of. Somebody can come out, Hunt can gladly come out and say, I reported to Holloman every evening on the wiretaps.
Well,
now you can't prove it.
On that, I would say it isn't. I think Claire's the more likely thing on the money side. Perhaps on the basis that in view of the later things that happened, not at the time you were there, but at the time, in other words, the time the 322 went over, and at the time that John talked to Hamas at that time. Certainly the humanitarian they were employed to pay and so forth, I think makes a great deal of sense. The later time, the so-called Acosta conversation, and a troublesome conversation that Dean had where he reported what Bittman had told 24. Those are back to where
I go back to you. He makes the point that that position depends on what people say and whether you have a chance to answer.
Yeah.
Which you may or may not have. He said you've got to face the fact the press is determined to destroy the president, which of course we don't. Wait a second. One of the first things that will happen if you resign is that everyone will assume that you're more deeply involved than you are.
Correct.
And for that reason, a leave of absence becomes, in his mind, a possibly more viable alternative. He says, but if you're ever directly involved by anybody in either the wiretapping or the payments, then you've got the real problem, whether it's true or not. But then he says, under the circumstances, the president could say, I'm convinced that Haldeman and Ehrlichman are not directly involved. He said, you've got to do a very careful statement with the lawyer.
I have been assured by, I thought a rather interesting thing from a legal standpoint. The lawyers said that they're writing me a memorandum that the effect we have studied all this and they're not involved. And I said, I have this from their lawyers. Not bad. It's a pretty good option. I mean, I think that's something we should consider in any event.
You can say that, and then say that notwithstanding their innocence, as this was stated, they have asked for a leave of absence until this is cleared up, and I grant it.
There must be no
Even
if you say, as John, you see, indicated to in an earlier conversation that he didn't go to sleep that night.
He said that to me, too. He said he had not thought a leave of absence was viable.
He told Zager flat out, no, no, no.
He said that. But he had thought it was viable. But then he got back to him. And he said, the other thing to do, and you should not rule this out, is to do nothing. In other words, not take the leave. And he said, the problem with that, that's the strongest position to take and basically the best position. But it's also the highest risk. Because if you do that, and then somebody successfully lays anything at your door, you will have destroyed the president. And that is the problem. He deals with that. Now he says, if you know they can't successfully lay anything at your door, then that's clearly the route to take.
Now, unsuccessfully at your door, would he say there, both areas, both legal and inference.
Yes, but
as far as laying something successfully at your door, that's been done in your case already, and in John's maybe in the future.
Not really. I mean, he just...
Not legally, but the inference thing.
Okay. He says he has a lingering fear about the stories of the feud between Ehrlichman and Mitchell, and that they've sworn vengeance on each other or something, because he said...
What about that? Is that... I would have heard something too then. Not on your part, but Mitchell's.
Not on mine. I know.
But you remember Mitchell?
Did you see that Nelson piece? It is what this rests on. Nelson printed a sort of a Hatler tale the other day. What happened, and I mentioned this to you, said he wasn't at a meeting. He said he was at a meeting. Both of them under oath.
Oh,
well, at least we're told that.
How's he doing?
I don't know what that's a curious thing. Nobody seems to get very upset about it. So.
Is Peterson telling you anything about Mitchell's problems in New York with that grand jury?
Not yet.
I understand they're very close to indicting him for perjury.
John says tomorrow, as you go over this, you should operate on a basic approach that first you have to go back to the fundamental issues. On the legal issue, if you're involved legally, get out now. On the moral PR issue, you've got to assume that they probably can nail you on something, you know, in some way, but you don't know that. You've got to assume that if you are accused, people will believe the accusation. The tendency will be to believe
the question is whether you can disprove.
The question is what you can undo.
Whether or not, yeah.
And you've got to go on the basis that whatever the facts are, they'll come out, that you've got to be prepared for the possible deliberate charge against an innocent person that's alive.
That's right.
You've got to be prepared that anyone who touched the money or knew the purposes of the money were to buy off witnesses to defend, to obstruct justice, will be guilty in the public mind, and that the worst possible picture will be painted of anybody and everybody. Now, he says, if you move out, if you resign, two assumptions will immediately be made by the public, and these will be total and irrefutable. One, you're guilty, and two, the president knew about it.
Sure.
So that act will not relieve the president of any immediate problem that he now has.
Absolutely.
The only possible thing it does is preclude the possibility of adding to that problem as new revelations come out, if you know that they are going to come out. He says it won't hurt you in the long haul to resign, because ultimately the truth will be known. And either you were in or you were out, and whatever that is will be known whether you're at the White House or whether you're not. But on the short-term basis, there's an enormous increase in vulnerability for you if I get out, especially against the deliberate lie. Expand on that a little bit more later. So then he says, so it gets back to what can Mitchell or Dean put on you. He said, one thing you got to remember, you can ride out PR vulnerabilities. You cannot ride out legal culpability. If there's legal culpability, you have it.
Not by that, you mean any kind of indictment.
Indictment that is on a valid charge. In other words, where I have to plead guilty or where I wouldn't be able to successfully defend myself.
All right.
Says you've got to make some decisions, and I appreciate the president's feeling that you should, and you ought to decide now what you do, and you ought to stick with it,
okay,
and not go back and relook at it unless the facts materially change, and then you have to relook at it. He said the president has told me that he is convinced that you've done nothing illegal. I have to say, Bob, he said, it is my feeling that if that is what the president believes, then he has the duty to stand by you. Then he said, don't resign just because you think that solves a problem. Because it doesn't. It aggravates the problem. Once you're out, the enemies, both the press and the political, have a wide open shot at the president. And they have a wide open shot at you, especially the people who want to lie. And he said, the fundamental question is whether the president survives in a viable fashion. Then that brought it back. He says, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't even take a lead. You've just got to go on the best guess as to what all the people involved here are going to do. He said, if you're innocent, and clearly innocent, then don't move a peg. But face the fact that they can still make you look bad, even though you aren't. Then it comes back to the basic question of fundamental innocence. You've got to look at this on a legal basis, the PR basis, your personal jeopardy, and the president's position. You've got to consider all those factors. He says, I have to believe that if a man is innocent, he should stand his ground and should not move. But the problem with advising on this is that I don't know the facts, so I have to deal with the law of probabilities. He said, the worst problem is you don't know the facts, so you have to deal with the law of probabilities.
We may know the facts, but we don't know what's going to come out. That's true. Or let me say, we have a pretty good idea.
If we know the facts, I think we've got to assume they'll come out.
That's my point.
So then he says, go back to the fundamentals. Get your lawyer's advice. Then he goes through a menu of all people said, but my final advice to you is, he said, Nellie's just come in and she's sitting there on the bed and she says to give you her love and tell you that she's standing by you and she doesn't believe any of this. And he said, don't ever take a needless risk. Make any move unless you know it has to be made. It's not enough to say that you can obviate your association with the president PR-wise by taking a leave or by resigning. No matter what you do, the president will be affected. And your moving out will definitely be an adverse move to both you and the president in the short run. And so what you got to weigh is that adversity worth whatever you mean by it? Now that's quite a bit different because he spelled it out in a lot more detail.
They thought it through more
than where it came out with Ron.
And usually, like when it's Kelly that it comes out and says, thinks about it.
I sure don't want to fault Ron on his...
Ron reported to me exactly what he said.
And what Connie says to me, I think that's what that he did report what he said. And what Roger said to me was, he said, Bob, I can't decide this because I don't know the facts. And I keep saying every time Ron calls me, and I've said it to the president when I talk to him, that he's got to decide. He said, I believe that your case is going to be especially tough. And there is a problem of how can you do your job with this stuff hanging there.
That's the point he labored with
me. And he said, the way I lean on this is that you should take a leave of absence until it's cleared up.
So did he get leave of absence?
Yes, sir. He raised it. That's why I raised it with Tom.
See, he was the leave of absence man. Frankly, basically the only leave between him and Conley was the two best judgments we've got here. Just got the leave of absence thing on the basis of fairness to the siblings.
Rogers then said, he said, I don't know anything about John, and I just don't know what the facts are on that, so I just don't know. But he said, I keep coming back to where I was. And I called him saying I'd like to talk with him. And he said he didn't want to talk with me. He failed. He said, he was concerned about his position.
Yes.
He says, I can't be in the position of being an arbiter between you and the president.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I'm not asking that, Bill. I'm asking, all I had in mind was asking your advice because I'm concerned that a decision is being made that may be being made on the wrong basis or for the wrong reasons.
Right.
If that's the case, I want to be sure that all the opposing views to that decision, regardless of how they affect me, are weighed. And I see you, Rogers, as being the most likely guy to make that possible because nobody else can talk to the president about this. And the president is in one hell of a position because normally in these...
I have somebody I could...
I was usually the...
You do it or John would.
John was an advocate in some areas that I never was really. Like on foreign policy things or anything else.
Sure.
You had somebody here who could argue the opposite of whatever was coming up.
Anyway.
Bill said, I must not be in the position of making a decision. Said, I'm not asking you that. He said, talk to the president. He wants to talk to you.
Good.
And he said, it's important that you talk it through with him and on a bare bones basis. Then he said, if after you talk to the president, you still feel that the approach is wrong or that the understanding is wrong or anything else from the standpoint of the presidency, then I'd be happy to talk with you about it and hear what your problem is. That's where he went. That's he didn't really
sort of
come out with my
yeah. Well, they're both right in that, being good lawyers and saying, well, we can't make a judgment on it without knowing the facts. And that's really the basic thing that we've got to talk about here today.
I think it is, because
the facts that we've got to look at what I'd like to do, basically, is to look at the facts, which I discussed, of course, with the lawyers on the legal moment, first. The facts on the mean by that. Frankly, for your sakes, and perhaps also for the presidency, let me say in terms of, well, for your sakes first, because otherwise you allow the crescendo of leaks and ex-party statements and so forth just beating the shit out of you, if at all, without your taking a strong, affirmative position. By God, we want to be heard, we want to be clear, and we're innocent. In other words, I just think, that has to be said. Also, from the standpoint of the president's got to be in a position that he has talked to his top associates, and they want to be heard, they want to be at the earliest possible time, they want to be clear, and so forth and so on. Now, but anyway, we can talk about that. That's a tactic. Which I think would come into play, in fact, in any event, whatever you do, you cannot just sit and wait, you and John, and until the grand jury finally goes its deadly process and the leaks go out of there and the whole damn thing appears in Anderson's column, and then in addition to that, every son of a bitch puts out statements for the effect of, like for the Colson's aid. That the president was told in December. Well, let me say, I've talked to Colson many times, did you know? No such honesty ever took place. Did he ever say that to you, John? Bob, did he ever say it to you? He might not have said it to John. No. Did he ever say it to you?
No.
No.
You know what he said to me is you've got to hunker down, don't let anybody out, maintain executive privilege on everybody.
Yeah. I thought maybe I'd lost my goddamn mind.
No, sir. Colson's line has been the solidest of anybody here and the most consistent of anybody here.
Yeah.
Total stonewall the last 2 weeks.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, just total, almost to the point of pathological. Yeah. You know, he would panic any time there was any thought of any disclosure of anything.
Yes, he said, don't do it. Don't do this.
Don't give up privilege. Don't go to the
other.
Don't
go.
He changed PR advisors. On this business of the prosecutor, did they tell you about panic in the prosecutor's office right now?
Well, yes.
The
panic because of the leaks.
Findings that apparently has landed on and has charged them, in line with your comments, findings, has charged the prosecutors with being responsible for the leaks.
My comments, the findings were made. Not last Friday, but the Sunday that he came in.
I see. Well,
they were
made,
also made at the cabinet meeting.
You made some at the cabinet meeting. Remember? See, you said at the cabinet meeting, you said those leaks are coming from the prosecution. Findings said they're coming from the grand jury. You turned around and snapped at it and said, Dick, let's not be ridiculous. Grand jurors don't keep minutes of the case of their testimony. Well, the upshot of that is out. The upshot is, that Glanzer and Silver are on the verge of nervous breakdown. Plus, you see, they're being hit by this refusing, this lawyer of that guy with the six cases of stuff.
Yeah.
Says that that Silver was engaged in a massive cover-up and wouldn't accept this evidence. Then, the 15...
Oh, it's a desk. I asked for your information. I said, I've got to know one thing. I called Peters this morning, made it 8 for 5:30 this afternoon. I said, no. I don't want anything about what happened to Grancher. I know this wolf was there. I've got to know. It's a report in the press, and he got the name of the person that got it. Who was it? Was it a member of the White House staff? He said, no. I said, who wouldn't have interviewed? He said, and he volunteered. It's a fellow named Shepard. Who? I don't know. Shepard. I said, who is he? And then he used the term. He's going to come before the grand jury tomorrow. I said, he's sort of a con man.
Con man?
Understand, I know nothing about this except that it smacks basically of Hunt and wanting to clean his office out, getting it to Shepard. Hunt
trying to.
Oh, he's clean.
He, Jeff Shepard, says he's clean. No people have ever heard him.
Right. That's enough. All right, fine. Go ahead, John. I stopped you right here.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that all the judges of the district court convened, and they landed on the prosecutor on account of the grand jury meetings while you were gone.
And told the public grand jury to investigate your grand jury was like.
So the prosecutor is now catching it from three sides. And when our fellows dropped in to see Glanzer last night, they were down at the courthouse taking a position, and they stopped by to see if they could pick up any tidbits. And Glanzer was just up on the chandelier, and obviously,
obviously they're concerned about that.
Gets it definitely out of here before he was getting in there. We get into that.
Let's come now to solutions. Therefore, however, all the warrants setting to get paid or deterred. That's the problem.
That's right.
No question. That's their problem. Look down the road. You've got a wire against the clock. Second. They're on the earth. So they should represent their case of the bill. We'll keep them all with some bad trails here. We're not limiting it to one time. You're anxious, willing, and I am making that offer, and I insist that I've got to have money. I want money to be demanded by them. How about that?
And then you want to report?
I want to report from you, Henry. I want you to do it. You call me. Question is necessary. I've got to have this for my own thing, before I make any decisions. And third, going to ask him to put down for me, which I don't know whether he's going to do this or will do this or not. Well, I can ask for it, but I've got it probably because I haven't got enough information to say, well, he's already, as a based on what you have today, I need to know what is your case potentially against these men.
Likewise, I would think he wanted against me to know whether there's an indictment upcoming or what the...
Well, that's right. Now let's talk about the Dean problem. The Dean problem is a goddamn tough one, because I heard about his conversation with another one of his threats. In fact, the counsel when he was not a friend, that I understand, not be a friend of anybody. The president gets caught in obstructing justice. Now, what the name of Christ means by that, I don't know. You know, unless he probably means that I'm trying to keep Peter's
control. Peter's reported to him, Rob, about your phone call from Camp David.
Community?
No, about not getting into national security stuff.
I'll ask him. Could have been very direct. In other words, ordered Peterson not to take that testimony.
He may have started to give him that story, and Peterson said, I've been ordered not to take that information.
Not a national security goal.
And he may be...
Is that obstruction of justice?
No, but what Dean is obviously doing here is manipulating you. He's trying to.
You're trying to.
And he's being damn clever, but in my opinion, I think he's being very...
Well, I told Dean, too. I said, you know, John, anything with me is privilege, and anything with national security is privilege.
Okay.
I told him that.
I think that's really sort of an open question.
Yeah.
And if I can say, all the back and forth with Ron and so on, what you've been down there, I'm thinking about this, I keep coming back to me, because there are things that don't add up otherwise,
right,
in this whole equation. And I don't know if you feel you can do this, but I think the three of us know one another well enough. Been through enough together, but probably the necessary that we have your very candid
assessment
of the threat to you. Obviously, neither one of us want to do anything to harm you in any way. We want to avoid harm.
Threat to me,
possibly. Yes, sir.
All right.
Now, let me just spit something out for you as a probably a far out point, and then work back from
that.
I think it's entirely conceivable that if Dean is totally out of control,
So I think we have to, think about that. We have to pray it. We have to see about,
see what the
crime is. What is the crime, if any, and how serious it is, and what it deemed is a threat, and what we do about it. My own analysis is that what he has falls far short of any commission of a crime by you, so far as I know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you may have talked about with him in those 10 or 12 hours that you and he spent during the months of February and March.
Right.
But you get down to a point where you've got John Dean prancing in there and saying, the president said this, the president said that, and having somebody in your behalf come back and say, no, the president didn't say that, and that's ridiculous. And so you get a kind of a credibility thing. Nonetheless, like he seems to be doing, he's very busy dredging up corroborating evidence or looking for documentation or taking statements from people based on leads that may have developed from those conversations. And I think really the only way that I know to make a judgment on this is for you to listen to your tapes, see what actually was said there, or maybe for Bob to do it, or somebody. See what was said there, and then analyze how big a threat that is.
Right.
If it didn't come out of those meetings, then I think it's manageable.
Right.
Because it then does not come out of your mouth. It comes by reason of the actions or something that one of us said or did, and it can be handled. But if you're really confronted with that kind of a dilemma, that kind of crisis in this thing, I think before any other steps are taken, the precipitous steps, one way or the other, we or on us for that matter, you better damn sure know what your old card is, you know, I agree. Now, beyond that, hell, I'm not afraid of Dean and what he might say about me, for instance. I think it can be handled. I don't think Bob has anything to fear from me, basically, particularly based on what the attorneys tell us. He has an almost unlimited capacity to dredge up anecdotes from a dim and murky past, and we're just going to have to handle it one by one. You mentioned the one possible thing. Our calls probably didn't tell you that Dick Moore's attorney called on him, on John Wilson, and indicated that Dick Moore just doesn't have any memory at all about LaCosta. He can barely remember even being out there.
Dick Moore told me,
I understand,
it was something.
I understand.
Maybe his memory's become dim.
His memory is apparently feeble beyond measure, because his attorney has explained to him what his exposure is,
correct?
And Dick is scared shitless, apparently.
To the point where he has contacted Silver to ascertain that he will not be indicted prior to his daughter's wedding, so that he can go to his daughter's wedding.
Now, that was his proposal. His attorney didn't do that.
Okay.
He wanted his attorney to go and find out.
Dick thinking he could be indicted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not for that conversation. So Dick has been cheek and jowl with Dean all through this process. Far more than either of us. Far.
Well, let me suggest this, Bob. You've got the conversation. Apparently, you've got to know what you can do.
Yeah.
Now, let me say, I remember. I would remember anything except, you see, there's always the possibility that Dean made a discussion with me. I know the Bittner conversation.
Yeah.
I know, however, that in that conversation, the question was raised with Blackmail.
Yeah.
I know, however, that in that conversation, I also raised the question for how much is it going to, would it cost me to get down to $1 million? And I said facetiously, well, I guess we could get $1 million. It was then that we started my own investigation. Now, I don't know
involve your personal practices in this thing. So
I asked Peterson whether I had talked to Dean. Dean said before he pled, he would like to talk to me or something like that. Peterson said no. So I'll find out from Peterson what Dean's told him.
Well, I think Dean is...
Dean the grand jury then?
I don't know. No, not yet. They haven't made a deal yet.
Is he thinking of making a deal still with Dean?
Yes. Well, a deal, no. His attorneys are still at arm's length.
All I'm saying is that before you decide, I think we have to look at the ultimate problem here.
Yeah.
And I must say that may not totally resolve the ultimate problem. I'm trying to think of where your problems are in this. I don't think we can brush them off by just saying that the problems of being able to govern or the problems of press on slaughter or anything of that kind. I think there's an ultimate problem here.
Right.
And there are going to be a lot
whether
of...
Whether I was involved in the destruction of justice.
Yeah, or in the bugging or in... You know, any of these episodes, and there are going to be 158 reporters in this town digging away at the individuals involved in this case for the next year, next 2 years, trying to get some guy to crack.
Well, so we get at least the situation. As far as we know, LaCosta, I never heard about. Bob was supposed to have these conversations. What the hell? Dean could have discussed that. I don't remember specifically, though, but he could have discussed the fact that we've got the problem when he made his, what he calls his cancer in the heart of the presidency speech, which he made, which was Moore's phrase. He could have discussed there the problem of these defendants. You know what I mean?
You know,
the payoffs and all that sort of thing. I said, whether I said anything that could have led him to believe that we should pay them off. I don't think so.
Let's not worry about it. It's either there or it isn't. Let's try to see what's there.
And if it is, then we have to play it in terms that I was having to find out what his implication was.
I think then it becomes very important how you couch your decision on Dean.
That's right.
And you can go one of several ways depending on what the problem is. And you can co-opt it. You can preempt it pretty much, I think, by the way you do it. But that's really a separate subject from what happens here. And
did he come up and talk to you about the Bittman conversation?
Yes.
How did he present it to you? After he talked to me?
No, I don't think so. I think this was before he talked to you. But I'm not sure. You don't know because I still can't fix when he talked to you on it. Yeah. He talked to me around the 20th.
But then, Bob, after we talked, you don't think you were in the room now, do you, when he talked to me?
Yeah, I remember the conversation.
You do?
Yeah, but I think it was, I remember.
Is the memory about like I say it? Yes. Did we say, look, go out and get the money?
I don't remember the specifics. I did remember the...
Was there any... Do you remember my saying, look, we've got to get the money. Can't you find somebody to get the money?
I don't remember you saying we've got to get it. I remember you saying can't sell it. We ought to be able to raise that kind of money here. You know,
maybe a dollar.
There ought to be that kind of money available.
Yeah, maybe a dollar.
Something like that.
That's right.
Yeah. That you didn't say to do it.
Right.
Or that you would or anything like that.
Right.
I don't think. I don't recall. But I can't fix going through the logs and everything. I can't fix when that conversation... Wendy is rather interesting. I have a very, I didn't realize I had it. I have quite a voluminous set of notes of Dean reports to me on things.
Yeah.
In this investigation period, when he was up in Camp David, obviously spinning out his web.
Yeah.
And he tried out bits and pieces. Or not bits and pieces, he tried out the
Did he bring me into the conversation about Bitman?
He did not.
No. Did he bring me into the conversation about
Bitman?
No.
That's all.